Hi, welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Shannon Elliott. Today we're going to discuss the process of choosing the right therapist for you. Felipe Harrington is a registered marriage and family therapist intern who practices in San Francisco. Specializing in body-oriented and expressive arts therapy, she works with artists, activists, and the LGBTQ community. She has a Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology. Joshua Kogut tutors and works with high school age youth through AmeriCorps and also volunteers as a peer mentor. Joshua has a passion for working with teens and young adults and one day hopes to become a narrative therapist. Welcome, Felipe, and welcome, Joshua. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Felipe, how does one start to look for a therapist?
Well, it can be a really overwhelming process, especially if you're in a moment where you're feeling like you really need help or support. So I recommend that people start by really just taking a little bit of time to get clear about what they want and what they're comfortable with. And that can include the type of person, the type of therapy. There's individual therapy, couple therapy, group therapy, and then also their budget and what would work for them financially.
Joshua, how did you start your process of finding a therapist and navigating the system?
Well, it's been kind of a long process. When I was younger, we went to family therapy with my family. And then as I moved out to California, I kind of had kind of stumbled into it. My job offered free therapy, and I kind of went for the therapist who was there. And it didn't really work out, wasn't really the right person, and actually found the right therapist through a friend recommendation, who I've been seeing for about 2.5 years.
Felipe, what should one look for in a therapist? You mentioned sitting down and you should really be thinking about sort of what your goals are and what you want to achieve. But what type of person do you want to be spending your time with on a weekly, bi-weekly basis, sharing your personal experiences with?
Yeah, it's a really great question because there are just as many types of therapists as there are people. And so, you know, choosing someone whose personality and just their presence makes you feel comfortable, like you could really talk about the deeper important things that you're there to address, and also someone who makes you feel inspired or hopeful about how you're hoping to grow through therapy.
So there's always a naturally uncomfortable period in the beginning, even if this person might be perfect for you, just
right.
Getting to know someone for the first time, going in, sharing your life story in 30 minutes or what have you. How do you know the difference between sort of that normal getting to know you discomfort and the discomfort that's a little bit greater that's a sign that maybe you should move on and find a new therapist?
Yeah, it can be hard to distinguish at first. I try to think of it like meeting any new person where there's going to be some discomfort and awkwardness, especially in a therapeutic relationship. The idea is to get right to the point. And oftentimes
and
the conversations, right, time is money, and the conversations are often much deeper and more meaningful than one might have the first time meeting a person socially. And so paying attention to just your gut feeling around them, it's normal to feel some anxiety or some vulnerability because of what you're talking about, but making sure that you don't feel any judgment or any discomfort or a feeling like what you're saying isn't okay or a really big fear of sharing the things that you're really there to share.
Like feeling overly self-conscious for bringing something up.
Exactly. Part of the therapist's role is to help you not feel shame in bringing what you need to bring and to find that trust and comfort with them that actually allows you to do what you need to do there.
So you're both big proponents on interviewing therapists before choosing.
Yes.
Why do you think it's so important, and how would you recommend others do that?
Well, I think it's really, really important for a couple of reasons. The first one is, you know, coming from like a low-income kind of background is I'm going to be paying this person for an hour a week, and I really want to make sure that my money is being used correctly because I don't have a lot of it to share around, really. And also because in having experience with therapists in the past, which didn't really work out, it was always a challenge where I wanted to talk about what was really important, but there's like a level of discomfort which wasn't just like, I'm an awkward, shy person. It's like, do I really want you to know this? And what's important when interviewing a therapist or finding the right person is, you know, when you do find the right person, it just makes such a world of difference. And there's just a different level of comfort and level of like, hey, I can talk about this and not feel like completely like I'm weirding someone out or I'm like doing something like that.
Have you had experiences like that before?
Yeah. I decided to leave one of my therapists because, like, he got emotional when I was talking, and I felt like there was, like, I was kind of uncomfortable with that. I was like, it's kind of not my job to pat your back kind of thing. And so I was like, okay, this is now at the point where I need to move on to a different therapist. And so the therapist I have now, like, I told him that. I was like, this is not going to happen if I'm going to be a client or whatever. Like, that's not going to happen. He's like, okay, cool. It's all good. We know what's up. And so I find finding someone who, like, can also be like, okay, I know what's up. I'm going to kind of go where you want to go with this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I encourage people to really see it as a hiring process and someone that you're hiring to support you. Sometimes that can be challenging because there is a feeling of a power difference because the client is making themselves much more vulnerable, whereas the therapist is sharing little to nothing normally. And so I encourage people to meet at least two, if not three, therapists. And if money is a concern, to do that over several weeks so that it works for your budget. You might meet one person and feel like, okay, they're fine, they'll do. And then meet another person who you feel really connected to and really inspired by. And so bringing in questions or interviewing them over the phone beforehand can help because a lot of therapists are willing to do a brief consultation free of charge.
Joshua, how many therapists did you go through before you found one that stuck?
I think like five. Yeah, all together. Yeah, like about five. There's one that might have worked out, but the thing about being young and finding a therapist also is that a lot of times your parents have control over that. So I was like, oh, maybe I can find a good therapist. And then my mom brought me once, and then she never brought me back again. So there's also a level of, like, when you're young, navigating, trying to find the right therapist, it also has to do with your parents, possibly insurance and stuff like that. And I have found it to be easier as I've reached past the teenage level.
What have you learned with each successive one and each successive attempt?
I think I've learned kind of more of what I kind of need out of therapy. It's like the first time I was like, I have no idea what's going on. I'm just, do I sit here and cry? Like, what do I do?
That's fair.
Yeah, and then I'm like, actually, I need someone to talk about this. Or actually, sometimes art is what I need to do here. And like, now I feel like I can communicate that because now I kind of have the experience to know what's up.
How did you know that you had found the one, the therapist for you?
One time I was in therapy and I was talking about like my mental health. And there's this thing in narrative therapy that's like externalizing this and like removing the problem from yourself. And I had a tea party with my mental health. And we had like tea with like glitter and it was like really giggly and like such a lovely way to look at, you know, mental health challenges. And I was like, okay, this is cool. I'm down with that. Yeah, it's kind of, you can stay.
So what type of therapy are you using and do you like and why did you choose that one?
So I'm using narrative therapy is the main therapy that my therapist does. He also has some like mindfulness and like those kind of practices. And before meeting with him, like it was more of like the dominant psychology stuff. Like you sit there for an hour and you talk and then someone gives you advice. What I really like about narrative therapy is how collaborative it is and how much of a say I get in it. So like the session always starts with like, what do you want to talk about? What feels good to you today? It's like, okay, today I want to talk about this, or today I want to draw about this, or today let's take a walk and let's look at flowers and maybe cry a little. Only me crying now. So I really like how I get to choose what's going on and how I get to use my story and my community as a way to heal.
Felipe, how does therapy work with maybe your primary care doctor or your insurance?
That's a good question. It can be kind of complicated and confusing for people. So if you do have insurance, taking the time to look into what your insurance offers as far as coverage for mental health is really important. Oftentimes, there's really big differences in different insurers as far as what types of mental health issues they're willing to cover therapy for, how many sessions they're willing to cover, and what percentage, depending on the cost of the therapy. And so even though it can be hard to actually find the answers to those questions, taking the time to read through the website, email, or call, which can take some stamina and dedication, can be great because then you know what the options are.
Is there any sort of consistency between plans or does it really vary widely?
I've found that it varies quite widely.
So it's worth some doing
cover,
research.
Yeah, some cover couples therapy and family therapy, some don't. Some cover 10 sessions, some cover endless. Yeah, it really depends.
So how might one's primary care doctor play a role in helping one find a therapist? What can they do to be supportive of the process?
If you trust your primary care doctor and there's someone that you would take a personal recommendation from for a particular therapist, you can get some names from them. That's one way.
And so let's say you don't have insurance. What do you do then? What's a sliding scale?
Yeah, so if you don't have insurance or you're not satisfied with the options of therapists that your insurance company provides, an alternative is to see a private therapist. The rates of private therapy can be quite high, so depending on your budget, going with a community agency can be a better option. Community agencies offer therapy oftentimes down to $20 per session based on your income.
So it can be accessible.
Definitely.
So what would each of you tell someone who's struggling to find the right therapist or just can't seem to find one that fits or tries and that person isn't working out?
Well, the main thing I would say is just to really remain dedicated to finding someone that feels right for you rather than going with someone who doesn't feel quite right because you're frustrated. So maybe taking a break and then coming back to it or asking family and friends who you trust for recommendations.
I would definitely agree with what you're saying, and as well as add that usually when I found talking with people and through my own experiences that finding the right therapist or finding therapy is, there's a reason behind it. There's a reason that why you want to do it. And remembering what's important, like I want to find a therapist because I want to find new ways to like approach people, or I want to change something in my life. And that's what's important. And I know how frustrating it is to be like, everything's not working. But it's also really important to remember why you did it in the first place and hold on to that, because in the long run, it really does help. And it also has a lot to do with like finding the right kind of therapy and finding the right therapist. And so trying things out is a way of committing yourself to what's important and doing the best you can with what you have.
I know it's important to do informed research, you know, before choosing a therapist or interviewing some, but you know, you go to some of their websites and they say, I specialize in XYZ therapy and these models and so forth. A lot of the time, folks might not even know what that is and what that means. And so right there, they're kind of stuck. What would you recommend in that situation?
Well, websites are a great way to get a sense of a therapist without spending money or taking the time to travel to a session. And so if there's words on there that don't make sense, just doing a simple Google search can be really useful. All types of therapy are culturally bound and come from certain communities and certain mindsets. And so it's pretty important to look into seeing if that resonates with you personally, politically, spiritually.
And I think another thing is important when you're looking for a therapist is, like you're saying with like culturally resonant and whatnot, is that like finding a therapist who can specialize in part of your culture and part of your language. Like, if it's important for your therapist to speak Spanish, speak ASL, speak your primary language, if it's important that they work in the communities that you're also a part of, so they kind of have a knowledge. Like, for me, it was really important to have a therapist who knew about the trans and queer community because I was tired of trying to explain pronouns. So looking on the website and looking at specialties can be really helpful. And even though some of them can be complicated, like I had a Google Gestalt therapy and I'm still not quite sure what it is. But it's like, okay, well, I don't know what this is, but he's had a lot of experience working with queer and trans folks. Okay, that I do know.
So if one is looking for a therapist, they might naturally be in this really bad space with, you know, not a lot of energy, pretty down. Right. And as you said, it can be a time-consuming and energy-intensive process to find a therapist as well. So if someone's in that really down place but just can't seem to get the energy to go do this sort of thing, what would you recommend to them? Maybe have a goal every week to search for one person or to rest a little bit. What would you tell them?
If you need help, to ask for help. Having a friend just even help you go through different therapist websites online can be really relieving. Letting the person who's going to support you know what the most important things are to kind of weed through. I think if you need someone just as soon as possible, asking a friend for a recommendation of someone that they've worked with that they really like, or if you want to have some distance between you and your friend's therapist, which is often a good idea, asking that therapist for recommendations of other people who are within the same community or the same modality of therapy can be more of a fast-track way to find someone.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I, you know, when people I know have been looking for a therapist, one thing that I've known they've done is that, you know, I've talked with them about it, but I've also been like, so you looked up a therapist this week. Let's totally get some cake for that. Like, that's amazing. And so being really encouraging to the folks around you who might be looking for more support, and maybe even for folks around you, if you're looking for a therapist, be like, this is really scary and hard. You want to bring over cookies and help me with this? Like, it's totally okay to, like, ask for help and, like, you know, celebrate what you're doing. And be like, oh, this is a really good step to being where I want to be.
That sounds a little bit like peer support.
Yeah.
Right there. So how would you say peer support can complement therapy, and how does it differ from therapy?
I think for me, they kind of go hand in hand, in my life anyway, where... there are some things in the therapy office, which is great. Like, I can, like, talk about, like, the deep, dark secrets, whatever, that I'm not necessarily comfortable talking about with my friends. But with my therapist, I'm not going to sit and watch a movie and cry a little bit, because that's just awkward. So, like, there's different things of, like, what comfort levels can be and different kinds of support. And so I think both are really valuable. Both, it's amazing to have friends with where you can just, like, bake cookies and cry and hug your dog. And then it's great to be like, I can like hash out this stuff for an hour, and then I can have a separation from it for a week. So I think both are really important, and they complement each other quite nicely.
What are some of the most effective things your therapist has done for you? I know you mentioned about reading a book series.
Yeah, it was so funny. Harry Potter, I kind of grew up with it, and it kind of shaped some ways of how I coped before I had a therapist. And I kept bringing up Harry Potter, and I was like, oh, Harry Potter, and he had no idea. And then he told me later that he went home and read the entire series, just so he could be able to be helpful, a most helpful therapist he could be. And he's done that with a few other books too. And I was just like, I was really shocked. I was like, whoa, you would do that to be a better therapist? Like, I didn't know people did that. I was really amazed, and like, we talked about books that were really important to me, and that was something like, okay, you're cool, I will pay you to be this cool.
So what would each of you recommend if you have found a therapist that's great, that works, that will go home and read the entire Harry Potter series for you, but you ultimately have to stop seeing them, whether because your insurance runs out or they move away or just for some other reason?
That can be a really hard situation to be in when you have such a bond and such trust with someone, especially over a longer period of time. So I think it's important to take the time to have closure with the person. So hopefully you'll know that it's ending in advance. And so you can really review all the progress that you've made together. And you can appreciate one another for the good things that have happened, and also offer any constructive feedback if there is. And get clear on what you have accomplished and what still may be remaining that you'd like to work on, either in another way or with another therapist.
I would also say everything that you're saying, but I'd also say that with this therapist, because this therapist really works for you, if they can recommend someone close to, if you're moving, close to where maybe you're moving to, or if they're moving, someone who's in the area, like, have a clear plan of what's going to happen next. Because I know for me, if like my therapist moved away, I'd be like, oh, I don't want to start this over all again. So maybe take some time before you have to make that kind of transition, being like, let's have a plan for this, so there's no like gap of time where it might kind of feel kind of bad.
You can also have your previous therapist do an update to your new therapist, mm-hmm. if you would like, and if you feel comfortable with that. That way they can kind of do an overview so that it's less work for you to have to catch the new
sort
person
of
up
pick
on.
Up where you left off, kind of a thing. Yeah. Are any therapies complementary with one another? So can you do individual and group at the same time? Would you recommend just focusing on one at any given point in time?
Definitely. You can definitely do more than one at one time. A lot of people will do individual therapy, really focusing on something, and then group therapy, especially around a particular identity or experience, such as, you know, having an illness or being a part of a certain community, such as the transgender community. So they can definitely be really complementary. It more just comes down to time and budget.
So how might effective therapies vary in different cultures? You made a really great point. You know, maybe something's really great for the LGBTQ community, or maybe something's great for the API community, et cetera.
So what therapy can look like can range much more widely than two people in a room that looks like a living room talking. The reason why I love expressive arts therapy is we can bring in music, we can play songs for each other, we can sing, we can dance, we can play instruments, we can draw, we can act things out. We can play with toys. There's so many options that are for all ages, really, depending on what you want to do. And therapy can also look like, you know, two siblings coming together, or an entire family coming together, or a community that's been impacted by something together. There's lots of things that we go through in life that can be way more effectively addressed in community or in a group of people through dance or through music. It doesn't have to be talking necessarily.
And I know you're big on community therapy, right, Joshua?
Yeah. What I've learned is that it can be really effective to try and meet people where they're at. So for some people, it's really helpful to just talk one-on-one, and some people, it's really amazing to do art. And some people's, with their cultures and growing up, some things are more comfortable than other things. And thinking of finding a therapist, what I recommend to friends is to find a therapist that understands your culture. And if possible, is part of your culture. So one of the people I was looking at for a therapist was also mixed. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. Like, that could be really great, because they can also look at what I'm going through as a perspective of someone in my community. So yeah, that answers your question.
And that's why I think the interview process is so important, because there's some stuff we can tell by looking at people and other stuff that we can't. And it could be that, you know, the therapist has a partner, a family member of a different community than themselves. And so just depending on what you're comfortable with and what you want, really asking the person about their experience with the particular thing that's mm-hmm. most important to you, and asking open-ended questions. So rather than asking, you know, do you have experience with chronic illness, asking what is your experience with chronic illness, mm-hmm. or what do you know about that from your work or from your personal experience.
Are there any red flags one should look for when interviewing a therapist? Any indicators to just run the other direction?
Well, something that I was mentioning to Felipe was, my biggest challenge has been finding a therapist, as well as people that I know, finding therapists that use the correct pronouns for them and are really, they say, oh, work with queer and trans people, but do they really mean that they also work with folks who are non-binary and use the correct pronouns? And this is a challenge that someone I know very closely is going through, where they had a therapist, and it was really nice until the therapist kept mispronouning them. And they're like, I can't do this anymore. I can't be with a therapist who...
And they weren't conscious of it.
They weren't conscious of it. And it's like, okay, then this isn't going to work. And so my red flag is definitely someone who says that they're culturally competent, and then through what they say or do, it comes clear that it's not what you need. And that's why I think the interview process is so important, asking open-ended questions, like you were saying.
You can learn so much more from open-ended questions, absolutely. And also how the person receives feedback is mm-hmm. really important. No matter how much you like your therapist, there's always going to be times where there's something that's not quite working for you, or something that has worked that you want to use or do mm-hmm. again. So seeing how open they are to receiving when there's something they could do a little bit different is really helpful.
What would each of you recommend to someone who might not have a high income, is on the low income end of things, and is looking for a therapist?
After getting clear about what type of person and what type of therapy you would like, contacting community agencies is the best way to go. There's some resources on my website of the top sliding scale agencies that are in the Bay Area. And so there's several of them, which is great. So you can call and really say, this is the type of therapy I want, and this is the type of therapist I'm looking for. Is there someone there like this? And because the agencies are often smaller, they'll actually know what the options are and be able to help you get matched with someone that you want.
And we're really blessed to be in such a resource-rich place like the Bay Area.
Yeah.
there's a lot of pretty good culturally competent therapists and resources out there. What if you're living in an area, you might be watching this in the middle of the country, somewhere else, where you might not have that access to someone who can understand you and is culturally competent? What would you recommend then?
It's definitely a problem. And I think trying out different people and really just seeing how they are with the fact that there is a cultural difference or maybe multiple cultural differences between you. Someone who really listens and takes in what you're saying and learns from it and is willing to do research and gain experience outside of the session. So they're not expecting you to be the one token example of whatever you are to inform them. And someone who's able to take that extra resource and experience that they're gaining and not assume that all of that is necessarily going to apply to you. So learning, but not getting really stuck on that being the truth either.
I would really agree with that. I think what's really important is the willingness to learn. I come from small town East Coast, so and a therapist that I've been through there, there wasn't a whole lot of knowledge about my communities and my culture. But I know some people who did find good therapists out there. And it wasn't necessarily because they had the knowledge before my friends went into their room, but because they listened and learned and took the feedback and were like, okay, well, now I know never to say that again, and actually didn't say that again.
So to close us off, for each of you, what would you say is the most important thing to keep in mind when choosing a therapist?
Everything that we said aside, I think the most important thing is just how you feel when you're around the person. Do you feel hope? Do you feel inspiration? Do you feel cared for? And does the person that you're working with really embody the things that you're wanting to cultivate in yourself? Can you tell that there's someone who's been through their own path of healing and can really guide you to where you're going, even though you're different people?
Yeah, I would say hope and maybe some more cheerfulness towards the future, and as well as feeling a little more confident that in working with this person that you're kind of aligning yourself to the life that you want to live. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Felipe, and thank you, Joshua, for sharing your wisdom today.
You're welcome.
To learn more about Felipe and her practice, as well as access useful articles, interview guides, and the list of sliding scale providers, visit her website at tigerseyehealingarts.com. To learn about different types of therapy, visit the Good Therapy website at goodtherapy.org/types-of-therapy. Navigating your insurance policy can be tricky, particularly in the new era of healthcare reform. To learn how health insurance will impact mental health services, visit mentalhealth.gov/get-help/health-insurance. Thanks so much for watching. We'll see you next time.